back together again, you and I chatting it up on a midweek Wednesday, November 20th, 2024, right here on Connecticut Today. As usual, every Wednesday, we welcomed Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor Dan Haar. He talked about how the state's Trust Act might come into play with some migrants over the next few months. CBS News correspondent Linda Kenyon dropped by. She had the latest on the Trump White House transition, including more on Connecticut's own Linda McMahon's anticipated new role. And the Yankee Institute's Andrew Fowler talked about a new report regarding the projected cost of some green energy initiatives. And here he is, Hearst Connecticut Media columnist and senior editor Dan Haar with an intriguing story to tell you about. Check it out. Dan has posted this at the Hearst sites. Dan, good afternoon. How are you?
We got the music. The music faded. That's okay.
Yeah. No, that you know, listen, all the computers here, they do it, so dummies like me don't. Dan, talk about this Trust Act, because you wrote an interesting piece. Are there moles among the state government? Explain what's going on here.
Well, in response to the activities of the first Trump administration, the state in 2019 passed something called the Trust Act, which says basically that Connecticut employees, and it is chiefly aimed at public safety employees, mm-hmm. and courtroom and public safety employees, I guess courtroom, many of them are public safety as well, it's more complicated than this, but to boil it down, may not cooperate voluntarily with ICE, the Immigration and Customs Service, when they are going to deport people or when they're looking to detain people based on their immigration status. That is to say that Connecticut will not help ICE do its job. And there are lots of complexities to the law, which I won't go into, mm-hmm. mostly because I can't, but also for time.
Yeah. So
that bill, to continue with what happens is from time to time, a state employee may work with an ICE employee. Mm-hmm. And maybe these things happen informally. Maybe it's, you know, hey, we're looking for this person because that sort of thing is no longer allowed under the Trust Act. Now, the question is, is it happening? There was a string of emails late last week, based on some detentions of immigrants where lawyers thought that might be happening. Mm. I do not have any proof that it did, and no one else does. It's the kind of thing that you cannot determine, right? Who's to know if ICE picks somebody up, whether it was based on a tip from somebody that was offered illegally? We're never going to know that. My point is that the Trust Act, if Connecticut wants to remain as strong a sanctuary state as the governor and the attorney general say we do, the Trust Act must be strengthened. And that's precisely what's happening right now in meetings and discussions. Let's give it some teeth, for example.
Yeah. So how would they, now you talked about teeth, but quickly, Dan, how would they do that if the notion here is a lot of this is done hush hush, would there be protections for these people? I mean, it's an interesting thought, but how would they do that?
Well, look, and I want to be clear that no one is accusing the judicial branch nor the Department of Emergency Service and Public Protection mm-hmm. of any wrongdoing. These agencies have fully complied with the law, and they have trained their employees, and everybody is on board. There is no backlash against this. We're talking about maybe, and maybe not, some rogue people doing some work. So the answer is, if you have consequences, you don't do things, right? If my managing editor says I'm not allowed to be on WICC 600 AM once a week, maybe I'll ignore that. But if he says if I do that, I'm going to be docked a month's pay.
No, we don't want that to happen.
Then I'm less likely to be on. And so, this is what we're talking about here. There is no mechanism for enforcement in the law currently. The other thing is that the lawyers want to see what they call a cause of action.
Yeah.
That is that a public and private cause of action. That is, a violator can be sued.
Okay. You also have a story here regarding the ongoing controversy over transgender-affirming care. And I guess, there is some flyers turning up? What's up with that?
Late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, a group identified as an anti-Semitic neo-Nazi hate group distributed flyers around West Hartford in the neighborhoods and on the streets of three physicians who were, I believe that they, I believe most two or three of them are retired. I didn't talk to them directly myself, but to some physicians who were or are affiliated with Connecticut Children's, and that is the Pediatric Medical Center based in Hartford. And they were attacked for their gender-affirming care for youths. And there's a, as I said in the column, which just posted, there are a lot of myths in this. It's simply not true that there is genital surgery done on underage teenagers and youths. That's just not a thing, I'm told. Now, you know, is there an example, one place where it happened once? I don't know. But that sort of irrational and, frankly, bluntly lying campaign happened in the Trump campaign. And so my belief is that the Trump campaign and the statements of Donald Trump and others embolden acts like this.
And finally, do you still have Linda McMahon on speed dial, or did you ever? Because she is now, I guess, going to be in a higher position of power than when she ran the SBA. How does Education Secretary Linda McMahon sound to you?
Well, apparently it doesn't sound good to her, because her charge is to dismantle the department. And that's why you're seeing a lot less bipartisan cooperation this time around in respect to Linda McMahon and who she is. No one can deny that she helped build a successful multi-billion dollar global entertainment network. And so she was uniquely, not uniquely, she was highly qualified to run the Small Business Administration, which she did well. And, you know, you can bicker about this or that, but I think her tenure there was viewed as being positive, and so it goes. And this is, I wait and see.
Excellent.
You know, so, yeah, just because of the, not because of her qualifications, not only because of her lack of qualifications in education, but because also of the Trump vow to dismantle the department.
Dan, this was a very nutrient-dense segment we did here. A lot of stuff in here, very, very heady stuff. I appreciate the time, Mr. Haar.
Pleasure. I don't know if it's good for drive time, but if you're out there driving, these are issues happening.
So. That's it. That's why we have you on. Dan, have a happy week, and we'll chat next week. Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right, Dan Haar, Hearst Connecticut Media there. Linda Kenyon, you hear our top bottom of the hour here on WICC, CBS News. Good enough to give us a few minutes of her busy time today covering the Trump transition. Hey, Linda, it's Paul here again at WICC. How are you?
I'm fine, Paul. How are you?
I'm doing well, and I'm wondering, Linda, explain to my audience the difference, if there is one, from, you know, trailing the people on the campaign trail and covering that from your perspective, and now we're covering the cabinet picks and the transition. And some of these cabinet picks, Linda, obviously, you're not looking at their, you know, political backgrounds as much as maybe, well, some, but as much as their, what, entertainment backgrounds? Or because some of these picks, I'm like, all right. Let's see how that works out.
Well, there was really certainly no transition for the reporters who were covering the campaign, because then it was the next day it was the chaos continued. And now every day it's the cabinet picks. And technically, the president-elect can't nominate anybody because he's not officially president yet. But he can say who his choices are. And some of his choices have been very controversial. And some of them are clearly right out of central casting, are television personalities, also very prominent on Fox News. And certainly, in all cases, the president's number one requirement seems to be loyalty. And we did see a lot of this, of course, in his first administration. So we're seeing a lot of that now as well. But again, some of these nominees are quite controversial, and the confirmation process may not be so easy.
Yeah, and Linda, we're seeing that in the case of Matt Gaetz, controversial Florida congressman who is now the nominee to, you know, had the Justice Department, and I had to make sure I had to do a wellness check with some of my progressive friends just to make sure they were okay. I mean, they literally, like, I said, no, don't do it. Sit down, take a breath. But now everything is like, well, are we going to see that report from the Ethics Committee, which apparently I think you and a bunch of networks reported, I guess, has been hacked, too. Somebody has a copy of this. The intrigue thickens here.
Yes, yes. Well, to sort of start from the top, Matt Gaetz was under investigation by the Justice Department over allegations of various sexual improprieties, including sex trafficking and sex with an underage girl. Mm-hmm. Also allegations of use of illicit drugs and some other situations as well. And the Justice Department did investigate him but did not return any criminal charges. The House Ethics Committee held a separate investigation of him, and I have been watching on our closed-circuit camera here. Yeah. Almost the entire day, the front door of the House Committee on Ethics, which has been meeting behind closed doors all day, to discuss the ethics report that it produced after it investigated Matt Gaetz and whether to release it. Now, why do they have a problem releasing it? Well, because Matt Gaetz is no longer a member of Congress. Mm-hmm. The day after he was named as the president's choice for attorney general, he resigned from Congress. And that means that the House Ethics Committee no longer has any jurisdiction over him. The Senate is very interested in seeing that Ethics Committee report because the Senate has the job of advising consent, and it will be the Senate, not the House, that will have to vet Matt Gaetz and decide whether to vote to confirm him. So Matt Gaetz has been the all-encompassing focal point today on both the House and the Senate side of the U.S. Capitol building. The House is because of the House Ethics Committee deciding whether to release the ethics report, and the Senate is because Matt Gaetz has been in the Senate today with his unofficial Sherpa, if you will. We actually call them that, the person who sort of ferries them around mm-hmm. Capitol Hill and introduces them to folks. And this Sherpa is none other than the vice president-elect. And he is taking Matt Gaetz all over to meet various senators because the Senate is going to be voting on whether to confirm him.
I can imagine, Linda, and the guest is Linda Kenyon from CBS News. I can imagine the conversations, Linda, that some Democrats are having with the Republicans, because you and I both know there are some older Republicans there who were not up for reelection. It may have been there, you know, in the middle of their 6-year term, who maybe is a parting message or something. I mean, they may vote no on this. I mean, Lisa Murkowski's been mentioned. Chuck Grassley has been mentioned. Any rumblings you're hearing about, quote unquote, defectors of maybe some Republican Senate members who are not going to run again saying, listen, I cannot vote yes on this guy?
Even those who are not worried about a reelection or might be worried about it in 2 years or so, because they serve 6-year terms or even 4 years from now, are not worried about that because they say that there's just, you know, have some serious concerns about Matt Gaetz. Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, Susan Collins of Maine, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, Todd Young of Indiana, and the list, there's at least nine, and the list seems to grow among Republicans who are saying they want to see the Ethics Committee report, and they are not inclined to just rubber stamp this particular nominee.
Yeah.
And but in the end, you know, there is also the prevailing opinion, and this has been going for both Democratic and Republican administrations, that a president has the right to surround himself or herself with the cabinet people that he so chooses. So that may be of interest here when it comes down to the final vote. But it is mostly a case right now of trying to get more information on Matt Gaetz. He has not been particularly close to the vest on some of his, for lack of a better word, behaviors or exploits. You may recall he was the one who spearheaded the effort to oust then-House Speaker Kevin McCarthy. And that was an event that paralyzed the workings of the House for several weeks, actually. And during that time, there are some members of the House who say that he was mingling among people on the floor, showing photographs of his various exploits, and bragging about some of it. And that may be in the Ethics Committee report. It may not, if we ever see the Ethics Committee report.
Yeah, yeah. And you and I try that in our places of work and what would happen to us quite properly, you know, right? Seriously. Mm-hmm. And finally, a woman who's very popular around here, very well known in our neck of the woods, Linda McMahon. She was with the Small Business Administration first time around and now nominated for Education Secretary.
Yeah, this is a very interesting pick. Linda McMahon is a Trump loyalist. She is co-chair of the Trump transition team. So I remember when Dick Cheney was running the transition team way
yeah.
back when, and he decided to choose himself for vice president. So
I remember that.
So we have Linda McMahon as education secretary choice. She does have a lot of experience in this in the first Trump administration. But what's very interesting about this, above all of that, is the fact that he has named her as his choice to lead the Department of Education.
Yeah.
But that is a department that he has also said he wants to abolish.
Yep.
So I'm not, this would be a very precarious job to take when you think about it.
Linda Kenyon, CBS News. Hey, Linda, thanks. Good chatting with you, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take
appreciate
care.
It. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, always good to have this gentleman on, Andy Fowler from the Yankee Institute. Hey, Andy, it's Paul again. How are you?
Doing well, Paul. Thanks for having me on again.
And I guess we have a new report here, Andy, that looks into what? Some of these green energy initiatives. And I know you folks at Yankee got together with who to put this out. And what does the report dictate here?
Yeah, so Yankee Institute partnered with several national and New England think tanks like the Joshua Bartlett Center in New Hampshire, the Ethan Allen Institute in Vermont, Maine Policy Institute, Fiscal Alliance Foundation in Massachusetts, mm-hmm. Rhode Island Center for Freedom and Prosperity, as well as Americans for Prosperity and Always on Energy Research. So, but the point is that we were looking at, okay, what do these decarbonization policies, where do they actually lead us toward?
Sure.
And frankly, it leads us toward higher energy prices, and for unreliable and unstable service. We can expect if we keep on these policies, basically we'll end up with rolling blackouts.
Mm-hmm.
And what good does that do for the people of Connecticut and the people in New England?
Yeah, that's the part that really caught my eye. When and talk a little about that, Andrew, the fear here of rolling blackouts, how was that ascertained, for example, Andrew, was one of the things that people should watch out for, or that could be an unintended consequence? How'd you come up with that?
Well, I mean, the research was led by Always on Energy Research, and they mm-hmm. delved into all the reliability of the ISO New England grid, as well as how other states have implemented environmental policies that, you know, will hopefully lead to green renewable energy. Mm-hmm. And it's not that we don't think that that, you know, we want a clean environment. We think it is an important and worthy goal, but to have a fiat that we're going to have 100% renewable energy just isn't feasible. It's also so expensive. Like
yeah.
if we converted to wind farms and solar, we'll spend hundreds upon hundreds of billions of dollars. So it'll not only make us more poor, but, you know, again, people won't be able to, if we have rolling blackouts,
yeah.
people will be less likely to, you know, turn on their lights, charge their phones, watch TV or power their appliances. And if for some, this could be a life-altering and life-threatening scenario for especially those who are, you know, elderly or sick, who depend on, you know, the dialysis machines. This is a real scenario that I think we need to be considering when we're trying to enforce these environmental net zero carbon goals.
Yeah, Andy, you touched on this a couple of seconds ago, but I just want to tee you up for this and let you get into it a little more here. You know, there are going to be people listening to us and said, oh, you got those Yankee Institute people again. You know, they're not for anything. And all these other conservative groups that this guy mentioned, of course, they're going to be against this. I'm sure you've heard that. I'm sure you continue to hear that. How would you respond to that?
I would say that they're, you know, we want bigger and better, right? We want, you know, the whole progress of human history in terms of technology has been for, you know, improving lives, to making lives less stressful and, you know, less strenuous. But it seems like these policies are taking us, you know, a step backwards of, you know, it's a higher electricity cost. I mean, Connecticut already suffers from one of the highest electricity rates in the nation. I just don't see how this helps people of you know, the middle class and those of modest means. We just don't see that. But we want bigger and better. If there's an energy source that allows for, you know, all the lights to be on and runs more cheaply, we will endorse that. But going to 100% renewable and green energy is just not feasible.
At least right now, Andrew, you know, and I've always said when it comes to this stuff, you see more and more electric vehicles on the road. You see more and more people without mandates, you know, putting solar panels on their homes and businesses. You see people more and more in the big box store maybe buying a range or a washer dryer because it's got a high energy efficiency. So I've always said on this stuff, Andy, it's going to come. But this is like turning a battleship and trying to do this with the technology we have now. As they say in this report, well, they want to do it by 2050 or whatever. No, we'll get there because the market is already inching us there. And in the end, we may get there, but it'll subsist at its own level. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, if we're all about Yankee Institute, we're all about, you know, advancing in technology.
Yeah.
Sure, if the market speaks, you know, if the market wants this, you know, then, you know, the market has spoken. But,
sure,
you know, to mandate it to like the electric vehicle mandate Governor Lamont took off the table about like last week. You know, there was an overwhelming majority that came out of roughly 70%+ that opposed the electric vehicle mandate that, you know, for your listeners, that would have banned the sale of new gas-powered cars by 2035, which was following the California emission standards. And, you know, but people can also look at California right now, you know, that they, you know, they can't. They literally can't power all the electric vehicles at once because it will overload the grid. So, you know, the amount of infrastructure repairs and development that we would have to do in order to accommodate these things is it's going to take a lot of money and a lot of willpower.
Yeah.
But again, we're at Yankee Institute. We're all about, you know, the free market. And obviously just more costly, I mean, more cost-effective energy. Mm-hmm. You know, bigger and better is what we think.
And eventually the technology will get there. Folks, check this out. The staggering costs of New England's green energy policies. Check it out, YankeeInstitute.org, with our friend Andrew Fowler. Andy, thanks. Always good to have you on, and we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks so much, Paul.
Appreciate it. Andy Fowler there from the Yankee Institute, the staggering costs of New England's green energy policy. So you can go there and you can download the report. I'm on the link right now, and there's a PDF version of that report. Yes, it's put together by conservative and right-leaning organizations, but give it a read or skim it there.